Welcome to Health Tech Matters, a podcast where we explore the ways how great healthcare products are built. I'm your host, Mary, and each week I talk to startup founders, product managers, and designers working in healthcare startups. In this episode, we are discussing what is so unique about mental health programs for students, early product adopters, and user engagement. Welcome our guest, Dr. Catherine Grill, co-founder of NEALS. NEALS provides mental health support for more than 40 million high school and college students in the US. Stay tuned. Could you please tell me more about your background, Catherine?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Dr. Catherine Grill. I am the CEO and the co-founder of a Silicon Valley mental health startup for youth. It's called NEALS. And my background, I would say it may be a little bit non-traditional. I actually started out in art. I was studying painting at university, worked in New York City. I did work in fashion for a little while. So had like a very different background than what I work in now. Ended up getting into art therapy and working clinically with patients for a while. And then did my doctorate in neuroscience and psychology and was spending a lot of time doing research and program implementation. So that's how I got into digital health. I eventually made my way from art into psychology and health program creation. And now I'm out in Silicon Valley working on the company.
How did you get this idea to create your own company, and especially in mental health industry?
You know, I would say like a lot of people, I got the idea to start this company based on a combination of personal and professional experiences. So when I was in school, mental health wasn't discussed. It just wasn't a topic. There was no sort of support for this. And I went to pretty rigorous school, so high pressure, and a lot of people were struggling. And that was my first experience seeing young people develop mental health conditions and not have any access to care. So that's what got me interested in pursuing mental health as a career. And I was doing, you know, clinical work and patient care, but I still felt like there were a lot of barriers to accessing healthcare, especially for youth. I felt like technology was that vehicle what we could use to get youth more comfortable seeking mental health care and to make it more accessible and affordable. So about 3 years ago, I moved out to Silicon Valley to start this company, and I haven't looked back. It's been a whole lot of fun.
I know that you're part of TechStars program. How did you actually join them?
So NEALS is a TechStars company. We went through the TechStars program, the TechStars Iowa branch, in September 2020 through their fall program. And there's a bit of an interesting story of how we got involved with TechStars. Maybe this says a bit about me as a first-time founder, but I wasn't as familiar with them. Moving out here a few years ago, I was learning about the tech space and the big players like TechStars and YC, participating in what was called the SoGal pitch competition. It was the largest pitch competition for female founders in the world. It was really exciting. I think they did maybe 20 or 25 places across the world. They had pitch competitions, and I was invited to the San Francisco competition and actually won that competition. So all the winners from across the world were invited. This was right before COVID, actually, in the beginning of 2020, to Silicon Valley, to this global pitch competition, and pitched a company there. And it happened to be that in the audience and some of the judges were the MDs from TechStars, and they really liked what we were doing and started talking to us. And they had an accelerator that was sponsored by universities, so doing a lot of work with the schools, and we worked directly with the schools. So it felt like a really good fit. So based off of that SoGal pitch event, I was able to connect with TechStars and then decided to apply to the program and move forward with them.
And was it hard to get into the program, and did you find it useful?
Yeah, TechStars is difficult to get into. My understanding is that the acceptance rate is less than 1%. So it is tough. A lot of companies might need to apply more than once. And I would certainly encourage that if you're a startup founder out there thinking about the program, and maybe if you didn't get in the first time around, because it was very helpful. Again, I'm a first-time founder, so I'm a clinician coming into now the startup field and really wanted to learn more about the business fundamentals. That's a lot about what they're teaching you within the TechStars program. So for me, that was really helpful. And then, of course, the name being affiliated with TechStars, it's prestigious. That was helpful for our fundraising and just for building up traction in the space. And I'd have to say the network as well, not just our MD and program manager, but the other companies within the program, companies at other TechStars branches. I mean, they say you become part of the Techstars family. And I think that really is true in that after the program, there are so many opportunities to connect with people, to support each other, just because they're also affiliated with the network. So overall, you know, Techstars was a really positive experience for NEOF.
Biggest learning from the program.
My biggest learning from Techstars. I think there are a few. One of the things that I really liked about Techstars was they had us work with acting coaches. So this is something I had never done before. I was a university professor, a researcher. I had to give a lot of presentations, healthcare presentations for work, and was not afraid of public speaking, of course, but was not used to, especially in this virtual environment, being on camera and being recorded, especially like for demo day and pitch day, and realizing how difficult that is, but also how important that is as a founder and as a CEO. So what I liked about Techstars was it wasn't like other programs where they were just like, well, let's work on you with the content of your pitch. But they actually worked with us a lot around the delivery of the pitch and giving presentations and even speaking with customers and just how do you present yourself on a call. And that was something that I found to be unique to the program. There are lots of different branches of Techstars, and each branch is going to have a different affiliate or sponsor. So we participated, NEOF participated in the Techstars IO program, which was sponsored by universities. And I think one thing that was really helpful for us, as we're, again, a mental health company, we have a B2B SaaS product that we sell to the universities that they provide to their students as a health service. And as we were going through summer before the program, when we already knew we were going to be part of the program, and then the fall when we were in the program, we were working on a redesign of our product. So a complete redesign of our MVP. So starting off with, you know, user research all the way through mockups, through actually development and implementation and deployment. So it was, I think, really exciting to be able to be a part of Techstars because we were able to partner with their universities and actually work with the school counseling center to get that product feedback, which is something that sometimes is difficult to be able to access the customer and get direct feedback from them beyond just the feedback from the end users. So that was something that was really helpful for us, just the ability to work with their schools from start to finish on a redesign of our product.
Very interesting, because people rarely talk about MVP, the first version of the product, but sometimes it's something totally different from what we can see right now on the website and what is functioning right now. So what was your way from the first MVP version to what we can see right now?
Yeah, I think the MVP is always different, and each iteration of the product is different, mm-hmm. right? So the general idea is the same, that it's a healthcare product that we're providing to students. We, you know, assess the students for their needs, and we have an algorithm that we personalize a care plan for them and update that dynamically. So every single month, we're giving them new content. We're giving them a new schedule of practices that they should be completing that are beneficial to their mental health, and then tracking their success and their health data and sharing that back with the user so they can see what they're engaging in and how that's helpful for their mental health. So the general concept of this is the same, but I would say almost everything else is different from the MVP to version 1.5 and version 2, which we have now, and version 2.5, which is coming out later this month. One thing that's really different beyond just the visual design, the user-friendliness of the product now as opposed to what it was over a year ago, is that we've added a whole new community section. So that's different from the original MVP. Through our work with our users and through our work with our customers, we realized the importance of not just skill building for mental health, but also community, and how social support is really important, especially for young people. So we've built up a whole community module. We're actually in the redesign of that right now. So we launched a MVP of that module last semester, and later this month we'll be launching a new version. But we have, you know, expert advice video series from different doctors and therapists talking about topics in mental health, like managing academic pressure, for example. We have a student story section, which I'm really excited about, where our interns and ambassadors create video series talking about their lived experience with mental health, which is so important for youth to go through to understand what other people are experiencing, to help break down that stigma. And even an event section where we're going to be hosting live events, live streaming workshops or educational talks about mental health, and then hosting also those recordings so students can access that afterwards. So in a lot of ways, the main concept is the same, but this community idea is definitely different in our version now, as opposed to what we had in the MVP.
Many people actually say that peer-to-peer support is quite hard to scale. So what do you think about scaling these services?
I guess it would depend on how are people defining peer-to-peer support. I think when people traditionally think about peer-to-peer support, they think about, for example, at a lot of the schools, they have peer counselors and they'll have a group of students who they come in and they give training to, and they can do, it's not therapy because they're not certified therapists, but they can do peer mental health groups at the school. And I could see that being very difficult to scale because it's resource heavy. You need to do a lot of training and you need to do this synchronous, almost like a telemedicine approach where everybody's getting together in a group as peers to support each other. But that's not what we're doing on our platform. All the peer-to-peer support we're doing, for example, the student storytelling, it's pre-recorded. So we'll have, you know, students who are working with the company. We have nearly 200 now through our ambassador program, and we work with them to create content to put that on the platform. And then it's just available to our student users at any point. So it's pre-recorded. They can just log in whenever they want. They can use that content however and whenever they want. And that ability to create the content like that, I think, makes it very scalable.
I was mostly thinking about online events, and especially when you have your special group, let's say 10, 15 people like in AA, so that you have your limited amount of participants and you need somehow to scale these groups.
Yeah, I think online events, I would describe it like this. We're not an event company, so we're not doing events every single day, and we probably won't be doing that, at least not in the near future. Mm-hmm. With COVID, especially in California, schools shut down overnight. And we saw not only a lot of students who were wanting to use our product, but who were wanting to join the company and really be involved in what we do. And when I say a lot, I mean 700. We had 700 students apply to work at our company and send us inbound requests last year. And that was just incredible. So our ambassador program is a bit of a response to that, where we said, there are so many youth who want to help us with the program, help us with product development and be involved. And that's amazing. And let's give them that opportunity. And that's how we built and scaled the ambassador program. And it's very possible, I think, it's up to the company, what their priorities are. Having a youth-centric focus for us and building community is a priority. So in that sense, it's very possible for us to find the time to have, you know, monthly events with this group, to record things, to put them up on the platform. Again, it doesn't need to be every single day, but to do it on a regular cadence, like once a month, it's absolutely possible. And it's been helping us scale because through this ambassador program, we're rapidly seeing peer-to-peer sharing of students across. We started in September with the ambassador program. We're up to almost 150 schools now who have that program. So it's actually really helped accelerate our growth and in a lot of ways made things more scalable.
And what do you think was the biggest driver of the ambassador program growth?
Well, we're having a mental health crisis. There's no debate about that. There are two things that we hear from our ambassadors as to, you know, why they're interested in our program. And one is the fact that we have a unique product and unique program, and that it really is geared towards youth. I think the majority of mental health products out there are made for the general public or made for adults. And then they try to put them on the youth, but it's just not tailored for them. And you can see through that pretty quickly if a product really isn't made for you. So that's one part. And the other part is this community. I think we've really strive to build a community where the youth feel involved. They can give us feedback and tell us what they like about the product and what they want to see, and then actually see the company taking that advice and implementing it.
And how are your programs different from the products for adults?
Programs for youth, mental health programs for youth, are almost entirely different, I would say, from adult programs. And that's something that we haven't seen other companies understand in the digital health space. Like, we're going to make this program, we're just going to give it to everybody because it's a larger revenue stream if we can get the adults and the youth at the same time. And it's not typically successful. And we know that because there are, you know, some companies who have been in the field for a while who just haven't gotten the traction that they wanted to get on the youth side. So I think there are a few main ways that a mental health program and a digital mental health program will be different for youth. But one is understanding the developmental age. The skills and the level of emotional resilience or emotional regulation that a youth would have compared to an adult is different. right? And we know that from the neurobiology. So we know that their capacity for engaging in these products and what sort of content that they can consume, that's going to be different. So you really need to understand the developmental age that you're working with. And it varies a lot. So just creating a program for youth, anybody 5 years to 25, that doesn't work because there's so much variation, right? So there's a whole lot around the program that I think needs to be different, even in the engagement that you're seeing with youth as well. I mean, they're digital natives, but they like to digest content differently. So the typical psychoeducation and Coursera style modules that we've seen in some adult digital mental health platforms do not work well with the youth. I mean, they're used to YouTube, they're used to TikTok. They want short, digestible content that's really eye-catching and that's going to grab their attention, and they want things personalized and personalized in real time. So everything from, I think, the language that you're using to the content that you're giving them is really going to be different on a youth mental health platform versus an adult mental health platform.
What also seems to me is that it's quite easy to make an adult person motivated in their mental health. It might be hard to do the same with a kid or youth. So how do you make kids engaged in the mental health treatment for a longer time?
I would think in some ways it's harder and in some ways it's easier. The stigma that exists for older adults around mental health is absolutely decreasing. There's very much still stigma around mental health within youth, and they talk about that, but it's decreasing and it's causing them to be more comfortable talking about mental health, seeking mental health care. The majority of mental health conditions are developed throughout that adolescent or young adult phase. So oftentimes when you have an adult who's seeking help for mental health care, they might already have a diagnosis, they might already have a medication regime, and they know how to manage that condition, and they know a lot about it. They're more comfortable with it. They've been going through it for years versus a youth who's now all of a sudden having their first experience and isn't quite sure what's going on and maybe doesn't have a diagnosis yet. So that experience is really quite different on the youth side. But I think as far as tactical strategies and techniques for engaging youth in mental health, is part of it is the personalization. I think that there's been a lot within digital health around creating content that's popular. For example, CBT and mindfulness meditation are very popular, but not appropriate for everybody. So providing diverse range of techniques. On NEALT, we have 7 different techniques. We do have CBT and we do have meditation, but we also have things like breath work and guided imagery and art therapy. So having a diverse range of therapeutics that you're offering is going to be more helpful because everybody can then find something that works for them. As well as something else that we've found that works really well is self-care tracking. So there's a whole lot that people do, youth and adults included, to improve their mental health. And a lot of times they feel like, well, it doesn't count. I'm hanging out with my friends. I'm playing video games. I'm reading a book. All of these things can be a great way to relax and take care of your mental health. But because it's not CBT or therapy or meditation, sometimes people think, well, it can't be helpful to my mental health. It doesn't really count. And that's just not accurate. What we do on our platform is encouraging them to identify what they do for self-care, like I said, whether it's exercise or video games, whatever it is, and then actually tracking that as well. So as much as you can, showing the youth that there are lots of different ways beyond what's popular to improve your mental health and take care of yourself, and that all of those things count and that they should be able to, you know, track those things and get credit for them. I think that can be really helpful.
How do you keep students engaged in working on the new habits?
Having your end user heavily involved in the development process, I think it's key. We actually have a youth advisory council that we work with on a regular basis, and they help shape everything from the way we talk about and explain and describe what this program is to the actual features or visual design. And that's really helpful for us. But also specifically with youth is giving them the sense of agency. I think there's nothing worse than a product where you go in and you feel almost trapped in the behaviors that you can engage with. And we see that sometimes in mental health where you go in and they ask you for a diagnosis and youth maybe doesn't even have one. So they're like, well, was there an option to say no? You have to pick kind of, do I want to do the depression pack or do I want to do the anxiety pack? And then you feel like you need to go through the whole learnings associated with that particular program. So it feels more like a Coursera or like a school course. I have to go through all these kind of modules associated with this one pack or track. And I think that is where we see a lot of drop off. So by comparison, what we do is we don't offer tracks based on a diagnosis. We really allow the youth agency to tell us specifically what they're wanting help with, what types of practices they're wanting. And we have 7 different diverse therapeutics, so they can pick between those. They can also pick the duration. So if they're wanting content that's 2 minutes versus 20 minutes, providing that diversity for them. We don't recommend any sort of engagement as far as how many days a week the youth have to engage. I think a lot of companies think they have to engage every day. We need those daily active users, but they're then thinking about it as what's best for the company, not what's best for your user. And especially around mental health, so it's almost like physical health. When you're starting to exercise, you might not do that every single day for an hour. You build your way up to that. So with mental health, it's the same. And we actually allow the youth to pick how many days a week do you want to engage this week? They can set their goal. They can change things dynamically in real time whenever they want. So by being able to give them that agency, whether it's around how often they're engaging, the duration of the content, the type of the content, that agency in real time dynamic updates, I think that that's really helpful for engagement. And that's something that's can sometimes be missing from other digital health products.
That's quite a unique experience of conducting user interviews with youth and with kids. So what did you learn about this user research? Maybe there are some differences and some things that you need to keep in mind. So do you think there are any differences at all?
I think as far as some of the best practices for conducting user research would be similar. The difference is that youth, a lot of times, aren't, especially in their mental health or medical care, aren't given a choice. It feels like the school is making decisions for them, the parents are making decisions for them. So, to give them that opportunity again to come in and share their opinion is something that they may not be used to, but is really important for them. And I think making that connection with them, thanking them for their time, learning a little bit about them, right? It's about the relationship building. Because when I'm building a relationship with the youth and I'm asking them about their needs, and I might spend half of the conversation just talking about them and not even talking about the product, but that's super helpful because now I'm understanding not just how they interact with my product, but what are their underlying needs. Sometimes I feel like youth might feel intimidated, like, can we give feedback or can we not? So not being defensive and really being open and thanking them for their feedback.
And how did you find users for user interviews?
Different ways. We mostly work as a B2B product where we're selling our service to schools and they're providing it as a school health service. So this is often something that might be embedded within our contract or the work that we're doing within the school for a pilot where they want to understand how the students are reacting to the program, and they'll help us set up focus groups or user research within their specific school. So that's one way it can come directly from the customers. And also through the growing ambassador program that we have now, we can connect with our ambassadors. We can ask them to, you know, put out feelers and connect with their friends. So if we want to connect with people who have never used the product and are seeing it on day one. And I think I found that the youth are very open to giving user feedback and often have more time that they'll spend with you compared to adults.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting insight because previously I was thinking that it's quite hard to build trust with youth, especially with teenagers, because adults, they can understand you, they can understand what user interview is, while young adults may not. And your target customer is school. So in this sense, you should be juggling between school's needs and students' needs, right?
Yep.
So what are the school's needs in this case?
Oh, that's always really hard. I'd say it depends on the school. That's one thing I think some advice I could give to other founders who are getting into this space is sometimes we think, oh, schools are schools. Like schools is one sector, employers is another sector. All schools are the same. And they're not. You have your, you know, smaller liberal arts colleges. You have your large universities. You have your private, your public. And you have high schools. It's a whole other thing. So I found that the customer need can vary within those kind of descriptors that I just gave, but also from specific customer to customer. What's been most successful is I think when the schools can get the youth on board as well. This is actually something that we're kind of working with and encouraging some of our customers to think about. And some of them set up youth health advisory boards or student health advisory boards where they are working with the school to explain what their needs are and to assess and implement health programs at the school-wide level. That's one place where we've been able to add value to our customers is because we work so closely with the youth, either encouraging them to also work closely with their youth or to provide insights that we have from working with our youth. Just to understand those basic questions, who would be using this program? How would they use it? Why they would use it? When they would use it? Because sometimes it is different between what the students would actually do and what the schools think that they would do.
And it must be really hard to find the first users because obviously schools want some proof that the program is working. So how did you work in this case? How did you find the first customers?
I think that in the respect of finding your first customers for any business, it's tricky, but I don't know that it differs too much from sector to sector in that there's always going to be someone who's an early adopter, especially for schools. There's a lot around the network effect and their reputation and who's innovative in the space and who's supporting students, especially this year around mental health. It's very good press for them. So who is partnering with a company and maybe doing co-development work for a company that can look great for the school, or who's implementing this program first. Digital health is very new within the school. So which programs are implementing digital health first? And that can not only be a way to improve the students' experience who are already enrolled at the school, but perhaps a way to attract new students is what we're finding. So there will always be some schools who say, I don't want to try this until 100, 500, 1,000 other schools are doing it, right? But then there will always be those people who are the early adopters and who want to be the first or who want to be one of the first. So the key, I think, is just finding those early adopters and then building that good relationship with them.
I have a few specific questions, and I wanted to ask you, since you were quite new to the business world, what have you learned about avoiding depression and avoiding burnout?
It's not like it was something that was totally new to me. I think in any field, but especially as a founder, understanding or setting expectations is key. Scheduling your self-care is key, and setting boundaries is key. So I usually take like a 2-hour window in the afternoon where I'm taking time for myself. Maybe I'm exercising, I'm going outside. So even if it's not as much time off, you're still taking some time every single day to work on your mental health. And those are a few things that I've seen, as well as just boundary setting. That's probably one of the hardest things for first-time founders is wanting to say yes to every opportunity. And you get to a point where you need to start saying no, and you need to figure out what's most aligned with your business objectives. So being comfortable in evaluating different opportunities, being comfortable in saying no, I think that's also really important to be able to set those boundaries.
And what are your start of the day, end of the day rituals?
Like my professional day? How do I start and end?
Just normal day. When everything is remote, professional day may start 10 minutes after you wake up.
Yeah, people always say it's fine. Like successful people are morning people and they wake up really early. And like, great if you are. I'm not. I've never been. It was always a struggle when I was a child for my mom to get me to the bus on time. Like it just never happened. And it, in some ways it still is. Like I'm not a morning person. So I actually feel like I start my day off sometimes by sleeping in. I never do like a 6 a.m. meeting or anything like that unless it's really urgent. So that's one thing that I will say that might be different from other founders, but sleep is really important to me. So I prioritize that. And that's how my morning is. I'm making sure that I'm getting at least 8 hours of sleep every day. I do then when I wake up, check my email, make sure that nothing urgent has happened, but also take time to relax a little bit. I have dogs, spend some time with my dogs and take that time for myself instead of just feeling like so rushed that I need to get to work. I think that's important both at the beginning of the day and also at the end of the day to decompress. So to try to get to a certain time at night where I turn off the notifications on my phone, put my phone away. If something's really urgent, somebody will call me. But beyond that, to just take some time to be with my family and to disconnect from the screens, both at the start of the day and at the beginning or the end of the day, I think is really important for well-being.
If you could write anything on the billboard, your personal message, what would that be?
I would say, don't let fear hold you back from becoming who you want to be. Because I see that sometimes with other people who are looking to get into the field, or sometimes the youth that we mentor, and they're nervous around the uncertainty and taking chances and taking risks and just doing a big leap, whether that's starting a company or whatever change you're looking to make in your life. So that's something that I think I've always lived by, is if I want to do it, I don't want to regret it later that I never gave it the chance. Believing in yourself is definitely the most important part, because there are so many people who won't believe in you as a first-time founder, or as a female or diverse founder. And that's unfortunate, but that's just how it is, especially in San Francisco. And then just overcoming, I think, that hurdle of getting the first external validation, whether that's getting your first investors, getting your first customers, and really starting to build up traction in the space.
And what is one thing you believe in that goes against conventional wisdom?
I think I would say one thing that I believe in that goes against conventional wisdom is setting your own rules. I feel like there are so many, when you're a child and you're growing up, there are rules that you have to do, and here's what you need to do to be successful. And definitely in academia, you're told this, right? Go to school, get good grades, get perfect grades if you can, right? Do these internships, go to grad school, you'll graduate, you'll get a great job afterwards. And sometimes that academic narrative I find really frustrating, because I think it can be a big source of stress for our youth, and it's not always true, right? You're not just graduating and being handed something. So there is some wisdom in conventional wisdom, but I think there's also a lot of wisdom in breaking those rules and just knowing that ultimately you can create your own path. So just because somebody's telling you, you need to do this because this is how other people do it, or this is how most people do it, doesn't mean that you need to listen to that. And that's really important. And that's some advice that I took within my professional career, making the choices I did, but even now within the company and things like our approach to the ambassador program, our approach to even the sales process, like it's different from what other companies do and some from what traditional startups do, but that's a key ingredient to our success. So not just doing something because you feel like you have to, but doing something because it feels like that's what's right for you.
And then what advice should startup founders ignore?
If I had to give advice to other founders, I would say always try to be gracious when people are giving you advice, even if you don't agree with it. I try to explain to my mentors, if I'm not going to follow their advice, why. So they have a rationale, but again, thank them for giving me that advice. But definitely, if anything, I follow my gut. I got advice recently that was really like inappropriate around my gender, for example. And sometimes that happens and it's frustrating. And if you're a diverse founder, it will probably happen to you and probably happen more than once. So I think when that's happening, you'll know and shut that down really quickly and just move on. You don't need to waste your time with people who are giving that antiquated advice based on your gender or anything like that.
Thank you so much for taking your time and answering my numerous questions. It was really a pleasure to talk to you and get to know more about youth mental health and products for young adults.
Thank you for your time. It's been a lot of fun.